At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The following is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Scott Norton, and you're listening to Keeping It Strong Style.
Yo, this is Rich Latta from One Nation Radio. This is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network. We present to you the Ace of Podcasts, Keeping It Strong Style. Let's go. It's the Ace of Podcasts, Keeping It Strong Style. Covering New Japan, they ready to hold it down. Jeremy Donovan and the young boy Josh. Come and hit a job out and bury all the frauds. From the Tokyo Dome over to the G1. Social Suplex is the network where we can get it done. I'ma chill and let them have it, cause this is just an intro. Keeping the strong style, 6 stars from the get-go, boy. Yeah, from Tampa Bay to the Tokyo Dome, this is Keeping It Strong Style. With your hosts, Jeremy Donovan and the young boy Joshua Smith. And thank you for listening.
Happy Labor Day, and welcome to Keeping It Strong Style, the Ace of Podcasts on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Jeremy Alvin here with the young boy, Josh Smith. On today's show, we will preview Blue Justice 26 and cover all this news in the world of New Japan Pro Wrestling. Please support our show by subscribing and following the Social Suplex Podcast Network and Keeping It Strong Style on the podcast app of your choice, and leave a rating and review. You can also get all the network's podcasts over at socialsuplex.com. Check out our Chop Tee store, chop-tees.com/KIStrongStyle. That's where you can get your official Keeping It Strong Style merchandise. There's free shipping on every order and 10% off your first order. That's chop-tees.com/KIStrongStyle. If you enjoy this podcast, please consider making a one-time or monthly donation by visiting socialsuplex.com/donate and click on the donate button under the Keeping It Strong Style logo. And we are not streaming live this week on patreon.com/KIStrongStyle. But normally, if you want to watch our show live or listen without ads, you can sign up by patreon.com/KIStrongStyle. And like I said, we're not streaming. So apology on the audio this week. So my house got hit by lightning yesterday. And my
fucking up.
I didn't lose power, but I lost internet, and so with it being holiday, have not been able to get Frontier out here to fix my internet. So I got Josh in via the phone, Dave Meltzer style.
Yeah. So last week, before we started recording, I had busted out this headset that I'm using right now to check on the quality, just as an alternative, as a backup, just to say, like, hey, if we ever did need to hypothetically use this, how would that sound? And you and Emily both assured me that it sounded terrible, and that it sounded like I was back recording in the 2018 days. And lo and behold, one week later, here we are, and I'm wearing the headset. What you hear right now is what all of my clients hear throughout the week. This is my work headset. And Jeremy, have we ever, I don't think we have, but have we ever recorded an actual episode through the phone before?
No, we interviewed Matt Sydal through the phone, and I think the first time we interviewed Rocky Romero, it was through the phone.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know we've done some phone interviews, but I didn't think we'd ever recorded with one another. So it's kind of funny, like when Rich's theme song was playing through the headset, it sounded like a 2012 recording to me, actually. So. But the nice thing is, you know, I could have been home at the crib chilling, you know, on the roadcaster with the full setup. But I thought last week Emily did such a great job talking about making towns. It inspired me to also hit the open road. So I'm currently driving as we record this episode. I'm being safe. Hands are 10 and 2. Eyes are on the road. But my heart is with you people.
Yeah, and this will be a shorter than normal episode, too. We still don't have that much to cover. And, yeah, plus we want to
thank God, the holiday.
Yeah, and we want to get on with our holiday. And all that stuff. So let's jump into it. So this is the first episode of September, which means we have to name the August Wrestler of the Month and Match of the Month. So like we've been doing lately, we haven't talked about it beforehand. So I'm curious, Josh, what's your pick for Wrestler of the Month?
Well, for the Wrestler of the Month, I think it easily has to be Takeshita. I know that there were some other individuals that closed out the G1 pretty strong at the tail end there. I would have to imagine Zach was a close candidate, especially if you're kind of considering his title defense against Nigel McGuinness at Forbidden Door. But I don't know, just off the top of my head, I'm trying to think back, like, who was really killing it down the stretch there. Feels like it's Takeshita, and then the kayfabe aspect of him actually winning it all. I mean, I don't know what you put down on paper.
Yeah, so I had Zach and Takeshita as my two. I mean, Zach did have some really good bangers there towards the end of the tournament. But yeah, I mean, I think typically we normally do kind of give it to the G1 winner. Also, kind of the kayfabe aspect of it, and then plus just some of the matchup and some of those matches, like Takeshita was in there with Zach, which was the second one, which was a really great match. And then, you know, he had the Finley match and the Evil match, which obviously it wasn't your standard, you know, match of the year level G1 final, but it still ended up being a very good match. It got a lot of crowd reaction and probably did the best he could have done with Evil. So I'm good with naming Kenosuke Takeshita the August Wrestler of the Month.
Yeah, as disappointed as I might have been with that final in and of itself, I think it's hard to deny, you know, just how effective and quality a lot of the matches Takeshita had were during the G1. Was I hard on him? Sure. Did I think he performed up to the level he did the year before? No. But I still think it was enough to make him Wrestler of the Month.
Yeah. And then we go to Match of the Month. And so I think the August Match of the Month is Zach versus Takeshita from the semifinals. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I was trying to think about it, and I really couldn't consider the whole entire G1 is a blur to me at this point. So the only match that sticks out in my memory was Zach and Takeshita, and that was going to be my suggestion. But that's also not doing the usual rigorous research that we like to do, where I jump in a cage match, see what everybody else thinks so that they can inform me of what's good, so I can turn around and regurgitate it to you people. But with that being said, yeah, that's the one that sticks out to me as probably having been the best match in this previous month.
Yeah, I went back through cage match, and I think this is the highest rated match for August, and some of the other stuff that happened in the month. And yeah, I think, yeah, confidently, this is the best New Japan match that happened in August.
Sounds great. So congratulations, you know, big take.
And
home two of them.
And, you know, speaking of you being hard on take, we have an interesting question here from Reddit user Mystic Spiral 480. He says, why is Young Boy such a friggin' downer? I know everybody agrees that this match was great, but I actually hated it. What's up with the Young Boy? He's on his Skip Bayless flow this year. He hates Shingo, hates Takeshita, hates Zach, hates Tsuji. Why does the hate flow through him like this?
I don't think that's true. I'm not even trying to be funny. I don't think that's true.
I know. Yeah, I don't. You're critical, and there are times where everybody loves the match, and you're like, I'm not quite as high on it. But I wouldn't say that you hate any of the guys listed here.
No, if I'm being honest, those are all some of my more favored active guys in the promotion right now. But that doesn't mean that I am going to blindly praise everything they do. So, yeah, you come to Keeping a Strong Style for the critical analysis. You don't come here for the circle jerk. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. All right. Well, next up on the docket, we're just going to kind of give like a quick primer for some of the feuds that are coming up on the Destruction Tour. So G1 has ended, and so this is what we have going on leading into the fall now and in September on this Destruction Tour. So one of the top programs, we got Zack Sabre Jr. will be taking on Ren Narita. And also this comes from Narita pinning Zack in the G1. So getting that title match there, the winner will face Takeshita next month at King of Pro Wrestling.
How many events are going on throughout this tour for this month with Destruction?
So let's see. Let me pull the schedule up here. So we have the Blue Justice show that kind of kicks off this tour coming up on Sunday. So that's one. Let's see. There's two Road Twos here. That's three.
Then are you looking at Cage Match or are you looking at NJPW World?
I was looking at the NJPW1972.com, but I should probably pull up the world schedule because some.
Yeah, I'm more interested in the actual in the world just because that's going to show the ones that are actually making tape.
Yeah. So let me pull
and take a look here. That's for September.
Yeah.
Okay. What the fuck is this Shinichi Championship Presents event? I know we talked about it, but I don't know if anything definitive has come out about what that even is.
So that's that pay-per-view that's hosted by the talk show thing that happens on NJPW World, and they're producing it, and it's kind of like a mystery vortex style of card, and guys are kind of a mixed match, like wild card. It's a kind of event.
And that's going to be a pay-per-view, huh?
Yep.
Okay. Gotcha.
Gotcha. So there will be the Yuji Nagata show coming up on Sunday, September 7th, and then there is Road 2 on the 13th that's airing, so that's two. Then there is two other Road 2s that are airing, that's four, and then Destruction in Kobe is five.
Okay, so we've essentially got, throughout the course of this month, four Road 2 shows, and then the big blow-off show is at the end of the month in Kobe World.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, so that helps me to, like, kind of contextualize and visualize what's down the pike here. Now, you know, I don't know if I literally haven't had time to look at the run sheet. You sent it a few moments ago. I'm guessing when you were at the barbershop. but I've seen some things online with Zach. I don't know if any of this is covered in the news, but I know that he's got a match that's either happening or already happened with Chris Brooks.
Yeah, I did have that in the news, so actually, let me jump down to that real quick. So, yeah, Chris Brooks challenged Zach for their first ever singles match coming up at DDT Ultimate Party November 3rd in Ryogoku.
But I also saw a graphic again for a different Japanese professional wrestler against Zach, someone that I was literally completely unfamiliar with.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So Zach was at he wrestled at Peter Pan this past weekend. Him and Fujita went up against Brooks and Takeshi Masada, and Sabre and Fujita won that, and that's what led to the challenge from Chris. See, I did not see the other challenge that came out of Zach.
The only reason I mentioned this is it sounds like Zach is kind of doing some excursion stuff in the meantime, which I do think is a little bit interesting, considering the fact that they like just put the title back on him and some of this stuff. I don't know if I would, I mean, I'm sure there are fans of it, but I don't know if it's befitting like the top billed ace sort of figure of the company, you know, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. So I am wondering if this is, you know, just basically a precursor to the fact that he is probably turning around and dropping the title. Not to Narita necessarily, but probably to Takeshita 1 month later. So yeah, I just thought that was interesting. But as far as like the Narita stuff, the match that they had to open up the tournament was really good. Obviously, Zach didn't get off to the hottest start and then kind of turn things around down the stretch. Were you surprised that it was Narita out of all the guys that beat Zach to be the one to claim the title challenge post G1?
Not really, because I feel like they're still kind of continuing this House of Torture push. You know, they really beefed them up going into Dominion, got Evil going into G1 finals, so it wasn't too surprising that out of all the challengers that they went with Narita.
I do have this fear, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds because we're going to review it or preview it here in the next few weeks, but I just find it hard to imagine that the rematch between them will be better than the first match they had here in the G1. Although these two guys do have a lot of proven chemistry with one another, I just feel like it's a situation where Narita had to like show out on the first night to really kind of state his case. But now that he's like going to turn around and probably not win the belt, it's going to be a House of Torture special, I'm assuming.
Yeah, so yeah, it's really going to depend on, yeah, which Narita shows up and how much shenanigans they have. Because, yeah, I mean, they have good chemistry and they did have a good match in the G1. So it just depends, yeah, are we going to go full board, like, ref bumps, the whole clown car is going to run out and all, you know, Evil's going to interfere and Fale and all these guys. Hopefully they kind of mirror it a little bit closer to the G1 match and maybe Zach can kind of get more of the old Narita out.
The other thing, too, is, you know, and I know you and I had talked about, you know, kind of just giving a precursor to what's going to happen on this tour, but I'm not necessarily feeling, and maybe this speaks to what that earlier question is about my hate, but I didn't feel like Zach came out of the G1 feeling like a reestablished top guy. Like, I know that he won matches and was booked strong, but I don't think necessarily that the match at, you know, Forbidden Door, even though it was for the local market, was received well locally. And even from a critical standpoint, I don't think that that did any favors to really establishing the fact that, like, Zach is the top guy right now in the company. And we've talked extensively in the past about the nature of the Goto when kind of coming from out of nowhere. And I don't think that coming through the G1, it felt like the reinvigoration of Zach. It felt sort of more like paint by numbers. And he was just kind of the guy there with the belt as opposed to the guy reestablishing himself as the proven champion.
Yeah, kind of almost feels like a transitional reign, which I kind of think is happening. I do think that he's losing to Takeshita, King Upper Wrestling. So that's what it felt like. It felt like, yeah, he's just kind of there. He's a champion. Yeah, he ended up having, you know, he won the B block and had, you know, the best record in, out of the whole tournament. But yeah, it didn't feel like, all right, we're really going all the way, making him his dominant champion. He's going to run in all the way through the fall into the dome as champion. It definitely feels like
this is
kind of a stopgap and Takeshita's going to beat him, and we're off from there.
And I do wonder about that, because the first time in the lead up to Zach winning the title, he felt so highly motivated. And even in his first title reign, people will, you know, point to failures from a, you know, from a business standpoint and the drawing and everything like that. I still felt like this was a guy who was hell bent on proving himself through the course of that reign and in the dome. But once he dropped the title, it feels like a little bit of luster has fallen off of that whole thing for him. And I know he regained the title. I know he had great matches with Goto this year, but he just right now to me doesn't feel like the real champion even, which is unfortunate. And it is interesting going into this, this title match, because I don't see it as one that is, necessarily compelling, honestly.
Yeah. And I guess that they could, I mean, maybe pull upset, have Narita win, and then you do Narita Takeshita, and maybe Takeshita beats Narita. But I highly doubt that. I think they kind of want to do the rubber match with Zach Takeshita. But yeah, I'm not really fully interested in this upcoming title match.
I think the answer here is, you know, since Gato, as far as we know, still has the book, it's late in the year. He could try and reinvigorate the match with one of his old booking tropes. So I think what we're about to see here is Renarita's going to steal the belt and carry it the rest of the tour is probably what's going to happen, because Gato likes to depend on those crutches. So
yeah,
why not just do that?
Yeah. So yeah, so that's ZSJ Narita.
I do think they need something to spice it up, though, honestly. Not in the House of Torture bullshit way, but like in the make me care about this actually kind of way.
Yeah, I would love it for Zach to like challenge Narita to like, you know, no, like, everybody banned from ringside or like submission only, kind of like don't know, something to make it where it's more focused on the wrestling and less about the run-ins and shenanigans.
I would like to see it just get personal and heated on a unexpected level, maybe during one of these Road 2 preview matches.
Yeah.
That potentially necessitates a different style of match altogether. Maybe not even necessarily a new stipulation, although I'm open to that, but like the work of the match actually mattering, because there's heat there. Right now it doesn't feel like there's any heat.
Yeah. Like if Narita gets so mad that he's like, yeah, I just want to straight up fight this dude without shenanigans, like that would be great.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
So another feud on this tour, we have Unaffiliated against the War Dogs in a series of singles matches. So we got Shingo Takagi will be challenging Gabe Kidd for the global title. Yota Tsuji will be taking on Dave Finley. And then Hiromu Takahashi will be taking on the Bone Soldier Taiji Ishimori.
Huh. And those are all singles matches. Are they all occurring at the Kobe World Show?
Let me see. I know. I think the global title match is for sure.
Well, I think it is interesting. We've seen so much of Tsuji and Finley. It almost feels like, why is this happening again? You know.
Mm-hmm.
So I do kind of have to question that. Although we have established in the past that these two guys have good chemistry and have improved their style of match, that's probably one to look out for, even if I'm not overly enthused about it.
Yeah, so all those matches are at Destruction Kobe.
You know, Ishimori and Hiromu, that's one that has happened again a million times, but they also have a lot of great chemistry, should be very good. You'd have to imagine, with it being a special singles match in the junior division, that it's probably going to establish the next challenger for Desperado. And then that main of, you know, the top billing of this feud, which is the global title match between Shingo and Gabe Kidd, that can be really good. I know that they were supposed to be like one of the next matches that Gabe had in the G1 that never actually came to fruition due to his injury. But I don't know. There was that recent report saying that like Gabe is going to, you know, continue to work AEW dates. They've got long-term plans for him. He's internally considered a member of the War Dogs, been working out with them. And it's really kind of, for a New Japan fan, a super disheartening report. And I do wonder if it's a situation where it's like, you know, maybe they will think about just taking the title off of him.
Yeah, he was on Dynamite this past week, and there was a promo on Collision where he seemed to challenge Darby Allin to an upcoming match. So, yeah, not sure. He is on this tour a lot, so I don't know if he's just going to be bouncing back and forth or kind of what the deal is. But, yeah, maybe it is. Yeah, he's going to be, you know, the writing's on the wall, and he's going to be doing more AEW for the rest of the year. Then maybe, yeah, they just go with Shingo winning the belt here, so you could have something with the global title going on. Or maybe it's just maybe the report is not as serious as people are making it. Maybe he's just going to be doing both more frequently, and he's going to go into the Dome as the global champion. It's hard to say.
Well, I mean, in my opinion at this point, I really don't think that there is a key prime successful example of anybody working multiple international promotions to a super end degree. You know, it's usually either going to be a situation where they dedicate a majority of their time to one company and that's where they're primarily pushed and used. And then they moonlight in the other company. Or if they do split time, they don't have enough focus one way or the other to really be counted on and trusted and depend on as a push commodity. So it's going to be, it's a fine line, that tightrope of trying to balance your responsibilities and everything. And it's not necessarily ideal if you're the number two champion in the company.
Yeah. And everything with Gabe's push is just felt really weird since all the Death Rider stuff, and then he got injured in the G1. So yeah, just
quote unquote.
Yeah, was able to do, you know, jump off a cage fine, but you know. So yeah, so it'll be interesting to see kind of what goes on there. I mean, he will eventually join this Road 2 tour. So yeah, he's working on the multi-mans and stuff like that to build up the Shingo match. And, you know, Shingo's been calling him out on promos for not being there and making dates. So it seems like they're kind of turning this whole thing into part of their story as well.
For me right now, the two things that are interesting about these two different situations is, like, Unaffiliated is just LIJ without calling it LIJ. And it showcases the lack of daring and creative risk-taking from Gato to actually do anything of note when it comes to the factions in New Japan. Like, we've seen major shakeups in the past couple of years with LIJ, Just Five Guys, United Empire. And he likes to err on the side of status quo and shies away from meaningful shakeups, you know?
Yeah, and even if he wanted to keep these guys together, like, why not just make one of them the leader? Make Shingo or Tsuji the leader and rebrand it or do something with it.
Yeah, if you're gonna keep them together, which I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of, but if you're gonna do that, create a new name, create a new objective, you know, put a new fresh coat of paint on the whole thing and give them an identity so that there's an actual cause people can get behind. In the meantime, it just feels weird, the same way that United Empire feels weird, the same way Just Five Guys kind of didn't exist, but it does, but it's part of Hantai, but no one knows. Same thing with, like, you know, What were the Tongans called? G.O.D. G.O.D. was like a subunit, kind of, sort of, for a long time. It's like, just fucking define what you're trying to do, man. Like, it doesn't... It's not good for the fan if you're not willing to tell definitive stories. There's only so much headcanon people can fill in themselves without you being able to, like, just point us in the right direction. Say, hey, here's who the leader is. Here's what's happening. Here's what their objective is. Here's why you should care.
Yeah, and also, you know, the same thing with kind of like the War Dogs and House of Torture, like, forever. Like, they're both Bullet Club, even though House of Torture really wasn't Bullet Club, but kind of refused to do anything until finally this year where they had the Dog Pound cage match. And so, like, that took forever to get them out of Bullet Club. And so, yeah, it seems like Gale just really just takes his time or likes the status quo, just keeping the factions the way they are, not really trying to have compelling stories around shifts in the factions.
Right, and I think that's one of the things that they benefit from more so than a lot of Western companies is how faction-centric everything is, that you have the ability to tell those kinds of stories, and they've shied away from doing that, and it's led people for so many years to come up with these ideas about what happens when Suzuki-Gun splits, what happens when there's a rift between Gabe and Finley, and, you know, I'm sure there's many other examples where you're wondering about these power shifts. Same thing with, like, LIJ and Tsuji and Naito, and you're, like, wondering, how is this all going to resolve itself? And it's winding up to be resolving itself in the most anticlimactic, least exciting way, manner possible, to where you're like, God, fuck, like, Gato, you're a dude that this show used to literally have the saying, like, don't ever count out Gato. Like,
yeah.
You know? Anything bad that happened in New Japan, we would literally be like, you can always trust Gato's booking. But for many years now, it's gotten away from that. As far as, like, the War Dogs, though, we're at this point where it's like they seem very ill-defined, and we've talked a lot about that in the past. And right now, the most, you know, exciting aspect of what's going on with them is the idea of what the fuck is Yuto Ice and Oscar Luebe going to actually be when we see them. So,
yeah. And I think Shingo versus Gabe should be a great matchup. Interesting to see, you know, what they go with there. Tsuji Finley, it kind of feels like both of those guys need a win. It kind of seems like War Dogs are kind of getting a little reinvigorated with the Knockout Brothers coming in. But then you feel like you need to heat Tsuji up going into the Tokyo Dome, and I think he would be a great guy to face Takeshita at the Dome. So yeah, I'm not sure which way they go there. And then Hiromu Ishimori, we've seen it. It should be very good. But if the winner is facing Despy, that's very boring. And it just kind of seems like we're on repeat.
Yeah. You know, the thing too is like with you mentioning that both Tsuji and Finley feel like they need the win. It could have potentially been a situation where it's like, all right, these are two guys that we want to prime for the title spot, but they're not ready for it because the timing's just not working out, whatever. Let's push them off to the side and maybe create something between the two of them that's meaningful, that will take up their time for an extended period. You know, maybe a great series of matches, you know, where they can, you know, both get pushed to the top in the meantime. The only issue with that is we already saw them do something like that just last year, where they had four matches in a calendar year and then a fifth one at the Dome. And now they've already, you know, wrestled at the, in the G1. This will be like in the span of like a 2-year period. It's like their seventh match. It's like, it's a lot. And both guys need the win and neither can really afford the loss. So you're hoping that there's some sort of brilliant creative waiting in the wings for both guys in the follow-up to this, but instead it just feels like Gato's run out of ideas. He doesn't know what to do with them, so this is just what we're going to do, you know? It's like an autopilot.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, and the winner, I guess, potentially maybe could end up actually challenging Gabe instead of challenging for the world title. And so, I mean, I guess you could run back Tsuji Gabe if you want, like, Tsuji to get the white belt back, or there is that compelling the story you could do with Finley and Gabe, and Finley kind of being pissed off, like, what are you, like, are you a war dog or are you a death rider, like, what's the deal?
I'm not so much worried about what you could do with the winner. I think you're 100% right. There's directions they could go and the white belt could be that landing spot. I'm more concerned about what do you do for the loser,
right?
Because neither guy can be, it's not even about me as a fan caring about them or them as a professional, what they need. I'm thinking in terms of the company. Like, this is a company lacking in star power. They really can't afford to be burning off potential top guys. They need to have something, you know, there needs to be a safety net waiting in the wings for whichever guy takes the loss, you know, to propel them forward within the hierarchy of this company and their storytelling.
Yeah, and I think it's more important for the company longevity to get Tsuji over and to go with him. Cause Finley's a guy I could see easily coming to America at some point. And I mean, he's great and he's a good top guy to have, but I feel like you could potentially lose him faster than you lose Tsuji. And so I would want to heat Tsuji up and get him rolling.
Well, I think if you have the right story and the right catalyst in place and he takes the loss, then sure. You know, I think that you could do both. You could potentially, let's say you did hypothetically want to work your way to Gabe and David Finley, and that's where you got the money on that end. But through this loss, you have a whole nother story prepared that's intended to also get Tsuji over. That's a win-win for everybody. You know, you don't always have to win the match to get over and to get heated up. It's just, we've seen what happens when guys lose in this company recently. They just kind of get forgotten. They get downcycled.
Yeah, and I don't trust 2025 Gato to have a compelling story loaded up for Tsuji loss.
Right.
I have, like, who knows? He'll just be like multi-man forever until like World Tag League.
Right, and this is why, you know, people are like, well, why is Josh hating? This is why. It's not about the talent. It's about the creative. I love those guys. It has nothing to do with them. I'm more concerned about, you know, who's handling this book.
Yeah. So that's Unaffiliated versus War Dogs. And we also mentioned the Knockout Brothers. So they will be challenging for the IWGP tag team titles. They'll be taking on Tomohiro Ishii and Taichi. So they're a big return from Excursion. They're getting a title match out the gate. You know, they made a great impression at their debut coming to G1 finals, and a lot of people are really excited to see, you know, like you mentioned, what they are, what they're going to look like, how they're going to wrestle. You know, there's been some mixed reviews on their excursion matches. I mean, the stuff that I kind of saw clips of looked good. But yeah, it will be interesting to see how they kind of meet in the fold here. And that match is also on Destruction in Kobe.
I mean, based on what they're an unknown commodity at this point. Even if you did want to try and go back and sift through whatever you find of the footage from their excursion, a lot of that is largely irrelevant because this is a reset. It's a new character. It's a new push. So really all we can base our potential opinions about them on is how they were perceived and received by the audience in this big re-debut, which seemed to be positive. On the other end of the spectrum, you got Taichi and Ishii, who, like, they won the titles. It sort of was like a Cinderella Man sort of story. And then everything got put on ice because the G1 took place, and we haven't gotten back to it. I'm sure there's probably some people that would have loved to see more out of the Ishii Taichi pairing with these belts. Unfortunately, the timing just didn't work out. I think this is a situation where you kind of just need to go with the hot hand and put the title on the new guys. Whether they're ready for it or not, it's largely irrelevant just because it's like it's the tag titles. They're fresh from excursion. It's not like putting the IWGP belt on them. It's the tag belt in a non-tag title company, so they should be fine.
Yeah, I think they should definitely go with the Knockout Brothers here for all the reasons you're saying. Like, we need to get the young guys over as we've been, you know, banging that hammer all year long. And so they had a great reaction. People are excited about them. Yeah, I think you just go, say, with the hot hand, beat Taichi and Ishii, strap these guys up, get them heated up, have them going strong in the World Tag League, have them be one of the favorites to, you know, win as champions, get them to semifinals, finals, depending on the format, and have them be a really strong team going into Tokyo Dome.
Yeah. As far as like the, you know, I don't want to preview the match yet because we're not really quite there, but I think that this is going to be, you know, it's going to tell us a lot about what these guys have in the tank. The one thing you have to be thankful for is there's no better potential team for them to work with in their debut to get them over than, you know, a team like Taichi and Ishii who work hard, long tenured, they get simpy, you know, it's going to be good.
Yeah. And then something that will not be good probably on this tour is Bolton Oleg defending the Never Openweight title against Don Fale.
The one positive that you have to imagine coming out of this, and I could be wrong here, but you have to imagine this is the last actual major significant spot they ever give to Bad Luck Fale in this company.
I mean, I hope so. I mean, but we've seen these guys wrestle before, and Oleg has gotten the win. So, and with this Hell of Torture push, part of me is like, all right, is it now time for, you know, the 50-50 and for Fale to get his win back and beat Bolton?
I highly doubt that, but that would be so disheartening. Don't get me wrong. I'm not one of these people that doesn't think that there isn't room for heartbreak in pro wrestling or upsets or bad guys to go over. I totally can get behind that. But when it's Fale and it's not just about the character, but also just the low levels, the very, very low levels of work, that's where, like, I kind of start to draw the line and be like, what the fuck doing here? Like, if they were to hypothetically put any title, and I mean any title, bro, we're talking, like, KOPW.
Never six-man.
Yeah, never six-man. Strong open-weight tag team titles, you know, whatever. Like, there is no just cause for putting any sort of strap on Bad Luck Fale in 2025.
Yeah, and I agree, but, you know, it's 2025 Gato, and I just don't know what he's going to do. I mean, I think obviously having Bolton beat him again and retaining is a smart thing to do. I'd probably just have Bolton go into the Dome with a Never title. the only reason Bolton could lose here is unless he's going to like lose up and maybe get into another title picture or big feud. But still, I would not really want to follow a title run.
I do think that there is value in a guy like Oleg Bolton working a variety of opponents and styles, you know, to grow and learn. And, you know, people seem to love Bad Luck Fale at this company. So I'm sure that his experience in the dojo and his time in the industry, he probably does have some sort of knowledge and wisdom to pass on to someone like Oleg Bolton. But I don't know. I don't know if I would waste the time and space and money to bring this guy in for this big a spot when the company is clearly in need of rejuvenation right now. I don't know if this is the right decision for this time and place.
Yeah, the company is, you know, supposedly hurting financially. Like, all right, well, here's a big waste of money right here. Like, I would not be flying in Don Fale for tours and matches and giving him a new gimmick and making him a focal point of this company in 2025.
How much merch do you think they're selling with the Don Fale gimmick on it? Yeah.
Oh, man. He's probably, like, buying it all himself and, like, selling it out of the back of the van when he goes back home.
How are you going to make money doing that? That doesn't make sense.
Markup.
Maybe. You got to find enough marks to get that kind of markup to work in your favor.
Oh, I mean, there are people who used to pay for get chopped by him, remember?
Yeah.
He can find somebody.
That's true. Yeah, but that was back when he had Jay White. You know, he sold out Madison Square Garden single-handedly. It's not the same.
True. Another title program on this tour, El Desperado versus Yo for the junior title.
Oh, man. I have no interest in that. Oh, God. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. Speaking of, yeah, the junior division just being on repeat, again, another title match and feud we've seen before. I don't care about Yo. So hopefully Desperado just wins and then we continue the repeat and probably it'll be him versus the winner of Hiromu Ishimori. But yeah, junior division is very stale right now.
Man, this is rough.
Yeah.
I literally, when I had told you before we started, you know, a few days ago, I was like, hey, we need to do a rundown, see where we're at with that, everything. I honestly was hoping that without having extensively looked at the upcoming, like, programs, that it might be a situation where it's like, hey, you know, this really isn't so bad. Like, I know people are down. G1 wasn't what people thought it might quite be, but they got some good shit coming down the lines, even if it's not for anybody but the hardcores. But now that we're looking at it, I'm like, oh, man, I don't know, bro.
Well, I mean, like, there is some good stuff here.
I know that post G1, there is always a bit of a malaise that occurs anyways, and God knows these guys do deserve their rest and brief reprieve, but like, fuck, man, I don't know.
Oh, man. So yeah, so that's that. And then also in the junior division, we got the Ichiban Sweet Boys will be challenging Sho and Doki for the junior tag titles.
That could be good, but it's House of Torture. And again, this is a very House of Torture heavy tour once again. So it's going to be on Robbie and Fujita to kind of like make something happen there, really.
Yeah. And then, you know, if we can get a little bit of the old Doki, maybe that would be great. But yeah, I mean, we're probably going to get a lot of shenanigans here. And I would love for Ichiban Sweet Boys to get the belt and kind of get back more into what we were doing when we had some great junior tag teams running the division the last year or so. So hopefully that's the way they go. And then the last thing here, we have several Tanahashi final road matches on this tour. So he will be facing Yuji Nagata coming up at the Blue Justice Show, and we'll talk about their history. He will be facing Master Watto. He'll be also be facing Great Okan. And then two different six-mans, Tana, Despi, and Deguchi versus Yano, Makabe, and Hanma. And then a never six-man title match with Yano, Yo, and Watto defending against Tana, Despi, and Deguchi.
I do think it's interesting with Tanahashi's final road that we're already in September, yet we still don't really have a strong indication of who his final opponent is going to be for the Dome. And I'm not even necessarily criticizing it, although I think you could. I just think it's maybe that they have something up their sleeve that they're not ready to announce. It also could be a situation where it's like they don't know who it is. They're biding their time. Like, I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, my hope is that they have the opponent and they have a big plan and it's going to be something cool that's going to, you know, create buzz and excitement and draw people to go to this show. You know, Tanahashi talked about, you know, wanting to sell the Dome out for this show, which I don't think they're going to do. But it's like, if you want to move tickets, it's like there should be an announcement. I mean, there already have been lacking on the announcements for Wrestle Kingdom with the ticket prices and just kind of what that week's going to look like. I think now's the time, you know, people are starting to book flights and consider going. It's like I would have the announcement maybe at like Destruction in Kobe, you know, after the Great Okan match. Like I would have like a vignette or video or the guy come out or something to get this thing going.
With that being said, other than the Nagata match, which we're about to preview, is there any of those other Final Road matches that have any interest for you on this tour?
Not really. I think the Nagata match is probably going to be the most interesting one. I mean, him against Watto, I mean, that'll be fine. Him against Okan will probably be fine also. And then these two six-mans kind of seem like they just might be goofy, kind of fun. And I guess maybe he could win the six-mans because it is a six-mans and you could do quick towel changes, but I don't really expect anything too interesting to come out of those.
Remember when Great Okan was like poised for great things and his like first serious significant Dome match post-excursion was against Tanahashi and people were expecting him and Tanahashi go out there and like pull off a miracle?
Yep.
And then it didn't happen. And that was like, that was the moment where like, okay, Tanahashi might not be the go-to guy for young people coming back from excursion any longer at this point.
Yeah, it seemed like they were trying to give Okan the Jay White path and giving well, that Tokyo Dome match, which even like that Jay White Tanahashi match wasn't obviously the best of Jay White. And also he got better post that match, but I don't really feel like Okan's really gotten to a point like Jay White did to where like, all right, yeah, he's a set guy now.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So, yeah. So, well, we'll see what happens from that. And so
It's been interesting on this call because we're recording and I'm in it. But, like, I've passed our old because I'm on my way to the TPA to pick up my better half. And it's like I passed the old Strong Style Studios. I just got gas while you're talking about Okan. I just passed Curry Leafs.
Oh, nice.
If you're from Tampa, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a different experience.
Well, so Blue Justice show coming up this Sunday, September 7th. So the car, we got Yasuda and Zane J taking on Matsumoto and Tiger Mask. So kind of continuing Young Lion feud there. Got Morishima, Bolton, and Chamakato versus Dick Togo, Don Folley, and Evil. Taichi, Taka, and Hanuma taking on Clark Connors and the Knockout Brothers. Then we got Daiki Nagai, Hiromu, Shingo, and Yotasuji versus Finley, Gabe, Gato, and Ishimori. Desperado, Taguchi, Umino, and Yuya Uemura will take on Master Wato, Togi Makabe, Toriano, and Yo. Semi-main event will be Doki, Narita, Sanada, Sho, and Yujiro versus Hartley Jackson, Fujita, Eagles, Oiwa, and Saber of TMDK. And then the main event, Yuji Nagata versus Hiroshi Tanahashi. And obviously a lot of history here between these two guys. This is going to be their 18th match. So they are, career record is 10-7, with Tanahashi having the more wins there in their rivalry.
Do you, I can do a lot of it from memory, but do you have their cage match singles record up?
So I don't have all the matches up, but I can pull it up real quick.
Okay. So, you know, the thing with Tanahashi and Nagata, it's sort of like a mentor-mentee relationship that turned into eventually, you know, a passing of the torch sort of situation. And then eventually, like, guys that were on the same level, essentially. But they wrestled so many times, and really, Nagata was super instrumental to that eventual ascension for Tanahashi to become the true ace of the company and the guy that everybody points to as like being the definitive guy for this group. Do you have the history between them there?
So yeah, there's a bit of, I don't have all the matches pulled up, but there is some history here in the preview that they did on NJPW72.com.
And the good news is I'm actually pulling into the cell phone lot, so I'll be able to pull up some resources and continue the show that way.
Nice. The first ever New Japan Cup in 2005 was when Tanahashi first beat Nagata.
So the lead up to that, which is interesting. So for a long time, Tanahashi was having singles matches between like 2002 to 2005 against Nagata. He was never able to beat Nagata. And through the course of those years, Nagata was one of the tip top, if not the ace, the company for periods of that time in the company's history. And this is definitely the period where people refer to the company as like being in a dark age. And a lot of that does refer to the fact that like post Kensuke Sasaki, it was very ill defined between Kensuke Sasaki until the time that they coronated Tanahashi as to who the real ace of the company is. And you could probably point to like Nagata or even like Fujita as well as Tenzan as being like ace figures through that period of time. But it really wasn't truly defined because the company was on the downtrend with business. They were, you know, they weren't apt to fully commit to any one person. And even when Nagata was on top for a lengthy period, they were making terrible, you know, creative decisions with him, including, you know, having him fight in real shoot MMA fights that he lost that hurt his credibility. Through that period, he had taken Tanahashi as sort of like an apprentice or understudy and like taken him under his wing. They teamed together very often, like within Hantai, or they called it at different times, like Team New Japan. And they even went over to, in like 2003, they went on a small excursion trip to Noah as invaders during the New Japan and Noah feud, and won the GHC tag team titles together. So they were like tag team partners, you know, teacher student, and Tanahashi was never able to overcome this guy. But by the time they get to the 2005 New Japan Cup, Nagata has gone through periods of deep inactivity from like, he was on that high in like 2002, 2003, maybe it was like 2001, where he was the ace and the long, you know, defending champion of the company. And then they put him on the back burner for many years, and he just didn't seem to do anything of note. And he had this mounting, growing frustration. And that 05 match with Tanahashi is the shift in their history where Nagata loses his fucking cool and beats the shit out of Tanahashi for real. I mean, it's part of the actual story, of course, so it's not like he's shooting on him, but it's a work shoot. And he puts Tanahashi in the corner, and he just starts kicking the fuck out of him. And the referees pull, you know, they do the five count, and he won't stop kicking him. And eventually they just stop the match. They awarded it as a no contest to Tanahashi, and that's how Tanahashi progresses through the tournament, which he ends up winning. But that was like the mounting frustration of Nagata being like, this guy's about to pass me, and they haven't done shit with me for all these years, and fuck him.
Yeah. Yeah, and then following that big win, they have a rematch in February 19th, 2006 at NJPW Circuit Acceleration, and Tanahashi gets the win again over Nagata there.
Yeah, they have a series of matches in 05, 06, and 07. 06 is where Tanahashi picks up the first win over Nagata. All in all, I believe they have a trilogy of matches that year. And
yeah, so Nagata, in 06, they wrestled twice. So it was the first match, I said, and then there was the April 29th match at New Japan Cup 06, where Nagata beats Tanahashi.
Yeah, I know Tanahashi loses to Nagata in the 06 New Japan Cup. And that was sort of the, like, revenge from Nagata from having lost to Tanahashi the year prior. I'm actually pulling up their singles match record here so I can kind of see it here. So, yeah, from 02 to 04, Nagata beats Tanahashi four times. Three of those matches are televised. 05 is the New Japan Cup match where Nagata just loses his shit. They do have a trilogy of matches in 06. So, like, Tanahashi beats Nagata for the very first time in February, like, legit. And that was, like, part of the ascension, because this is the first year, you know, Riki Choshu's got the book again. They're going to put the title on Tanahashi later on in the year. The plan was for him to beat Brock Lesnar, obviously, and him finally defeating Nagata was part of that. April of that year, Nagata turns around and defeats him in the New Japan Cup. And then in July of that year, Tanahashi, as the, they wrestle in that heavyweight tournament title tournament to crown a new champion when Brock Lesnar pulls out of the company, and Tanahashi beats him in the semifinals. And that kind of that's like the first real trilogy between them is in 06. And then they have two more defining trilogies in 07 and 2011. So it's like they really have basically five defining periods in their history, which is like everything before 06, the trilogy in 06, the trilogy in 07, the trilogy in 2011, and then everything post that. And for, you know, a lot of people, we look at, we talk about the Okada Tanahashi series as like that, you know, generational passing of the torch sort of situation. But a lot of people don't look back and realize like Nagata was that for Tanahashi before Tanahashi was that for Okada.
Yeah. Yeah. And, here it shows that, you know, going to 2007, that it was Nagata, Tanahashi would beat to claim his first of three G1 championships. So kind of that almost another passing of the torch moment there.
Yeah, the interesting with that too is in April of that year, Nagata beats Tanahashi to regain the title. So like, you know, Nagata hadn't even really gotten very many title shots since he dropped the belt. He finally regains it from Tanahashi in 07. And then in that G1 final, Nagata is still champion, and he enters the finals against Tanahashi, who he beat for the title, as the champion.
Mm.
And then 2 months later, Tanahashi, having defeated Nagata for the G1 final, he cashes in his title defense in October of that year in Sumo Hall and defeats Nagata to regain the title. And so that was like the real true, like, official passing of the torch. Like, Nagata got his big win back. He regained the title, holds the title, you know, through for about 6 months, but 5 months basically, and then turns around, drops it back to Tanahashi. And this is like before the Muto win at Wrestle Kingdom 3. This was like Tanahashi, that's the match that made Tanahashi as like, okay, he is the actual ace of this company now.
Yeah. So yeah, so this is a really important rivalry for Tanahashi's career. And you know what, so many of the veterans, you know, are not really wanting to put a lot of these young guys over like Tanahashi and Nakamura and Shibata. I think it was really big here for Yuji Nagata to be one of the guys that's like, all right, I'm going to help get the next generation over, and just how important this feud is.
Yeah, their 2011 match is Tanahashi defeats Nagata as the champion, and then they wrestle in the A block for the G1 Climax in August of that year. Nagata defeats him, and that basically qualifies him for another his final title shot against Tanahashi, which was in December of that year at NJPW Live from Aichi. It was a pay-per-view. Tanahashi beats him. And that's sort of the definitive, like, that's it. You know, they had the 06, the 07, and then the 2011 series. They do have three more matches beyond that, but they're all, you know, block matches in the G1. Tanahashi wins every single one of them. The most significant one is probably that 2017 G1, where that's the one where Nagata was
his last G1.
His final G1, and that match with Tanahashi is probably, if not the best match of the entire G1 for Nagata, and sort of one of the big send-off matches that he had throughout that tour. Now, the funny thing is with Nagata, he wasn't of the mindset to say like, hey, I want to get these next guys over and I'm going to give back and blah, blah, blah. It wasn't his attitude to the entire Tanahashi experiment was totally different to Tanahashi's attitude about Okada. His whole view was, I never got my due when it was my time. And now they're trying to use me as a stepping stone to make this guy fuck him. And every single match that they wrestled, Nagata was eating Tanahashi alive and forcing Tanahashi to figure out how to get his shit in against a guy who was not cooperative or giving or inclined to make him in any way. Like, Nagata and most of the third generation guys in general, Kojima, Nakanishi, Tenzan, they all basically felt overlooked and bypassed when the new generation Musketeers were on the rise, and felt like they had never gotten their just due when the company was going through the dark ages, and they were just like, fuck them. So their attitude of working the matches was so different from what we've seen during golden era New Japan, where all these, you know, veterans were incentivized to make new stars and get guys over and find new dance partners. That's not what Nagata and Tanahashi's matches are like. They're fights. They're Nagata beating the shit out of Tanahashi and Tanahashi trying to figure out a way to show resilience and to shine against a guy that does not want him to shine. And the matches are really, really, really good, especially the 06 and 07 series. I highly recommend them. They've got some really great matches. And eventually, you know, the outcome of that entire feud is that Nagata eventually was sort of reestablished as this aged legend who never did get his just due, and Tanahashi sort of made him in that. And eventually Tanahashi does earn his respect, and now they see each other as peers. But there was a real, like, actual rivalry and hatred between these guys for many years.
Yeah, that's very intriguing, especially I like the point you mentioned, like, Tanahashi almost kind of like made him, when, you know, you would think that it would be Yuji Nagata that fully makes him, but even Tanahashi just being so great in their whole story of how this comes together And yeah, getting Yujiro Nagata to that legendary, like, yeah, this guy could have been, should have been a guy.
Now, one thing that's really interesting is, like, Tanahashi had learned a lot of his leg-based offense from Fujinami and Muto earlier in his career, but he never figured out how to really piece that stuff together to structure his matches properly until the major Nagata matches, because it was born out of necessity. It wasn't born out of, like, oh, this is how you structure a match. He was like, oh my God, this guy is kicking me so fucking many times and I can't take them. I need to find a kayfabe way to take his leg strength away so that he'll ease up and that I can get edgewise into the matches. And that's why he started focusing on the knees and the low drop kicks and the, he was already doing that stuff a little bit. Yeah, he already had that stuff in his offense, but then when he started really spamming it, it was to basically force Nagata to sell so that he'd stop kicking him so much.
Nice.
Because Nagata was beating the shit out of him, and he was like, I'm not going to be able to take these. So it is going to be interesting what their last match together looks like, and it's also it's funny that, like, Nagata is many years his senior, you know, broke into the industry in the, like, early 90s, I think, like, 91, 92, 6 or 7 years older than him, and he's better off physically than Tanahashi is right now.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens when you don't do a frog splash to the floor, you know, in all your big matches.
it is truly amazing. So I'm excited for the match. I don't have, like, extreme visions of grandeur, especially after this hellacious schedule that Tanahashi just kept. And then there were a lot of smoke and mirrors to protect that guy in that cage match recently.
Yeah.
Speaking of Tanahashi, I mean, I don't watch DDT, but I saw him getting basically simulated raped in by Ueno. So I saw a lot of press about him getting his pants pulled down. He's wearing the tee back. I don't know, Jeremy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that was interesting. And yeah, Tanahashi commenting on a new door and feeling, you know, interesting from that match. And not quite sure if that's going to make the excursion match of the year list, but it was something.
it highly likely will not be. I know I saw a question in there where Emily was asking if we were going to review that and talk extensively about it, and I was like, definitely not.
Yeah.
You know, no shame in the game, you know, if that's your thing, but the goofy pro wrestling, the DDT-ism is not my shit. So
yeah,
never has been.
All right. Well, we did have a question here about Nagata Tanahashi from Aspiring Shoulder, saying, how would you describe Yuji Nagata to somebody who's just started dipping their toes into Puro?
I would describe him as the last true representation of, like, real strong style in New Japan, like what classical strong style was. Like, it's Yuji Nagata, you know, Mr. IWGP, stiff motherfucker who can work his ass off when called upon to do so, even to this day.
Yeah, and I think a lot, too, what we talked about, too, is the guy that kind of gets passed over, who should have been, you know, the ace, and obviously was a victim of Inokiism and having to face all these MMA fighters and victim of bad booking, and a guy that, like you mentioned, had that strong style, had that great, you know, amateur wrestling background and grappling, and somebody who kind of did fit that mold of what, like, Inokiism, like early Inokiism was, that strong style, and then being kind of forced into having to fight MMA fighters kind of really hurt him and hurt the company. And he's a guy that, you know, could have been, like, this bigger main event guy, but due to all that stuff, it's like he had to eat some of that for a while.
Yeah, and there's an interesting thing about that. During that whole Dark Age period, before the rise of Tanahashi, there seemed to be basically two main story points that dominated New Japan in that early 2000s period. And it's going to be, you know, MMA guys coming in from the outside, and we need a champion or defender to defend against those guys. And that usually ended up being Nagata. And then on the other hand, we have all these invaders and outsiders coming in from the neighboring companies, whether that was All Japan or Noah or a variety of other smaller independents. That usually ended up being Tenzan. Not to say that they didn't both have their dalliances with guys from those different schools of thought, but like, by and large, Nagata spent a majority of his time fighting proto MMA fighters in most of his reigns and most of his major programs. And then Tenzan ended up being the guy who fought off all the invaders and represented New Japan against outsiders.
Yeah. So yeah, it seems like, yeah, there could have been so much more that could have been done with him during that time.
Yeah, there were large swaths of time where, like, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was just because the creative changed or management shifts, but like, Nagata just went dark for a long time where, like, they just didn't use him. And some of his best work of his career ended up being during the golden age of New Japan in the G1s and in, like, the Never division when he was way past his prime. And, you know, a New Japan third generation dad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, when we kind of jump into, you know, almost keeping a strong style era and that 2017, 2018. Yeah. I feel like Nagata was still, very much one of the hardest, you know, workers on that roster. And was a guy that was, delivering some really great matches during that early time period.
And even past that, if you look at modern times, Nagata might not be somebody that you count on to always deliver great matches, but he always has at least one or two match of the year contenders, even as far as this year.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and he's had great runs outside of the company in like All Japan and Noah and different variety of places beyond that. So, if you are just dipping your toes in and you kind of want to see like about Nagata, just know that he was probably like essentially the proto ace of the company before Tanahashi and someone that's very underrated. And you should look up some of the best matches that he's had in his career trajectory and go back and rewatch some of that stuff because it's really, really good.
Yep, and so that's going to be Blue Justice coming up this Sunday, Tanahashi and Nagata.
There is a reason why they keep having these Blue Justice produce shows even to this day. And I believe part of it is like deep down, somebody knows that this guy didn't get his just due when it was his time. And he's so well respected that they still want him to be able to do these produce shows.
Yeah, and also,
honoring him for his legacy and his contributions.
Yeah, and also running in his hometown, giving him the big main events, and kind of like getting his input in these shows. So, yeah, good stuff for Nagata. And it's crazy that he's still going to be going after Tanahashi retires.
Right. I mean, Tanahashi got a world title match this year, and it was good against Goto. But so did Nagata, and I think the Nagata match was better.
Yeah. All right, well, that's going to do it for our Blue Justice preview. A couple news items, and some of it we already touched on. But first, on August 22nd, Francisco Akira fractured his wrist while competing on the RevPro anniversary event, and it seemed like he would be able to kind of just rest and let it heal, but he did end up getting surgery on the wrist, so not quite sure how much long he's going to be out. I'm not sure what the recovery time is on surgery on a fractured wrist, but he will be out for the indefinite future. Hopefully he heals up quick and gets back soon. And then we talked about DDT Peter Pan, and we talked about Vegeta and Saber defeating Chris Brooks and Takeshi Masada, and then the challenge that came to Zack from that, and Tanahashi's match with Denshoku Dino. And yeah, that's all I have in the news. We have a few questions here. How much time do you have left?
I'm in the parking lot. I got plenty of time. We can power through this shit.
All right. Last Commission 7252. What role will Goto have at Wrestle Kingdom? Will he be in a big time singles match or be the opponent for Aaron Wolf?
Oh, that's a great question. And it's really hard to predict because I don't know what the focus on him is going to be coming back from the title, you know? In the past, you've kind of hoped and imagined that when guys win the belt, it would project them to a new place within the company's hierarchy to where they receive some level of like respect and protection and sort of, just recognition. But that hasn't always been the case, you know? Mm-hmm. We've seen guys like Will and Shingo go from holding the title to doing less than meaningful things. Same thing with Sonata. Same thing with Zach. So it's hard to say. You always often hope that winning the title means that moving forward, you know, same thing with Ibushi, where it's like you think after they drop the title, they're made and they're going to garner a certain level of acclaim and respect and booking presence. But that's not always the case. It seems like if you weren't already made before you got that belt, you're not going to be focused on in the immediate future. Plus, I don't know the timetable of if Goto will be back for Wrestle Kingdom or not at this point.
Yeah, and I know there were rumors that he's not under contract right now. Then the whole Street Fighter movie stuff, which I think is starting to film right now. So, yeah, who knows when slash if he'll be back. I mean, like you mentioned, I could see a world where he comes back and it's just Bishamon again and he's just a tag guy again. Or, you know, they kind of put him in that role of having him get other people over and just losing the guys. I mean, I think with his drawing ability that he showed this past year and the title defense, like I think he's a guy that you should still have as a main eventer as long as he goes. I mean, I'm not saying he should beat all the young guys, but I think he should be continue to utilize as a top main eventer and a guy that gives you great main events and is a guy that's going to help you draw and draw a business. I mean, would it be the worst thing to have him be the guy to face Takeshita in the Dome?
I think that there's a possibility if they're banking on the idea that that they could capitalize monetarily off of that for sure. But that would mean reintroducing him in a way that the crowd is excited for. So I'm wondering if if he were to come out at like King of Pro Wrestling or what's like the final event in November where we usually cut everything off?
Power Struggle.
Yeah, if he came out Power Struggle or something like that and challenged him face-to-face, if that would be enough to get people excited or if it needed to be a video vignette sort of situation, I don't know. But it is viable. That is a potential possibility I hadn't thought of.
Yeah, it kind of fits almost like the theme of Tanahashi's your retirement show, kind of having some of these, you know, older guys of Tanahashi's era kind of in a spotlight moment. And yeah, I think that, you know, Goto and Takeshi had a great match in G1 last year. So, yeah, I mean, I think that could potentially be a great dome match if they wanted to go for a more established guy against Takeshi instead of another young guy.
It's not a bad way to go, honestly, especially with some of the business that they did. That is actually something they could do. But I think they would need to handle it properly in terms of introducing the match on the world stage to actually make people care about it.
Yeah. Then next question here from Noah Russell says, where are Mikey Nichols and Shane Hayes? Feel like we're lacking a tag scene at the moment in New Japan and they're a perfect team for the company. And he also said, is anyone else as giddy about the prospect of seeing Nichols and Hayes back for World Tag League? Any insights as to why they've been away for so long?
I'm not that excited to see them in World Tag League because they've kind of, sleptwalked through those past couple of years. But I also don't totally put the blame on them because the company has shown a lack of commitment to them. And I don't know if that's self-fulfilling prophecy or not, but that's just how it's been. They come in for Tag League. They never work the Dome. They never work any of the January shows. So as far as why they're not here, why the company's not invested, I don't know. They're spending that money on Fale, you know?
Yeah, we had to limit our Oceania budget. It's like, all right, we got Robbie Eagles is coming in. Who else should we pick? Oh, we got to go with Fale. Sorry, we can't bring you in Hayes and Nichols.
Yeah, basically.
So I think it's probably just a budgetary thing. They probably just don't have anything compelling to do with them right now. Again, we say it over and over again, like New Japan's not a tag team promotion, and only one or two teams really get pushed throughout the year, and the division's been a hot mess this year with, Naito leaving and, Jeff Cobb leaving. So, yeah, tag division's just been a whole hot mess this year.
With that being said, though, with the Knockout Brothers kind of taking a leading role, they might need some fresh opponents. Of course, they could do what they've done in the past, and that's just like mishmash guys together that have no business tagging. Or they could, they really want to lend some credibility to those guys as a tag team, get them working with a top act. You bring in, TMDK.
Yeah, I think that would be a great team for them to face and a great opponent for them for potentially World Tag League. So I do think there is value to TMDK, but I'm not banging the down the door saying we need to have these guys right now.
Right.
Next question from that dude named Menace. Should New Japan try to do crossover shows with All Japan to boost up attendance?
I don't know if that will work because from my understanding, All Japan is also struggling financially, but it could create some buzz and excitement. The problem with that is New Japan has in the past not shown the capacity to play well with others, much in the same way they're getting boned right now by AEW. They've done the exact same thing to smaller promotions in recent times, and it's not benefited really either group, honestly, too much. So I think that they would need to, if they were planning to do something like that, they would need to rethink how they handle the creative of something like that entirely.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen, there was supposed to be this whole, United Japan Pro Wrestling, and there's supposed to be more crossover shows of all these companies, and we kind of see the format of what they are, and they just kind of end up being a bunch of, multi-man tag matches with no kind of compelling stakes behind them. So if they are going to do a cross-promotion show, I would like to see some more intriguing matchup with some of the top guys versus each other.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm not opposed to having cross-promotion and angles across promotions and, trading wins back and forth. Stuff like that can be very fun, very exciting, and worthwhile, but it can't be what they did with Noah.
Yeah. Next question here, Les Commission 7252. Any thoughts on the Raja Jackson situation? I have heard of wrestlers, bookers, or celebrities being blacklisted from wrestling, but this issue feels more personal than that.
I mean, it's a week old. I'm not shy from chatting about it, but I think it's been sort of like covered to death. And it's very clear that without relitigating the whole thing, I mean, the information's out there, guys. We're a New Japan podcast. There's not that much to really talk about. Roger Jackson, clearly, there's a fucking screw loose in his head or something. What that dude did, I don't even know how it's not going to be prosecutable. It's really super fucked up. I'm glad I saw the most recent update that Psycho Stew guy is safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, recovering, but who knows what sort of long-term complications he's going to have for it. But that's one of the worst things I've ever fucking seen in a wrestling ring. I mean, I counted, and it's somewhere between 21 and 24, you know, consecutive punches to the head of a knocked-out opponent. And the guy that wasn't even prepared or aware it was going to happen is super fucked up.
Yeah, just really disgusting. Yeah, one of the worst things, like you mentioned, to happen in a wrestling ring. And yeah, there's footage of him, you know, on a stream or something like that, talking about how he's going to go in there and mess him up for real. And so, yeah, it's kind of hard. Like, there's very hard evidence against him. So I don't see how he doesn't get prosecuted whenever they have a court case.
Well, I was being conspiratorial a little bit, and I was, because there's all this video footage of him, like, before it happened, after it happened, you know, and I was like, this all seems like angle sort of shit. Like, what could have happened here? And then I was talking to Rich, and he sort of smartened me up, and he was like, that footage you're watching is not from the promotion. It's from Raja Jackson, because he's a streamer, mm-hmm. and he had a video group, or, you know, they had video, whatever the term is. They were filming him for content the whole time. And I was like, oh, I'm like, cause it looks like, you know, cause the post match, he's like, walking in the parking lot and the guy, he's on the phone and you can hear the guy on the phone. And I'm like, this just looks like 2010s TNA sort of like backstage angles. I'm like, this doesn't make sense. And, I'm like, what the fuck? And then he was like, yeah, bro, cause that wasn't with the wrestling company. That was with him. And I was like, oh, and you know, my understanding is that they had squashed the beef, but then he got amped up because he was on the live stream at, in the crowd and people were clowning on Raja Jackson, you know, cause they saw him getting pie faced with the beer can and saying like, you have to do something about this. This is embarrassing for you. You got to go in there. You got to show him blah, blah, blah. And they hyped him up and they got him into a mental space where he took liberties and almost killed a dude for it's some of the stupidest fucking shit I ever seen.
Yeah. Just
honestly, you should go to jail for it. Probably.
Yeah. Just absolutely. Yeah. Insane stuff. So yeah, but glad Psycho Stew is doing better, and yeah, that promotion seriously needs to get checked out too for allowing something like that to happen in the ring too. Next question here from Tony Farrakhan says, what do you dream about?
Bro, I can't even talk about first things first is like, I don't always remember my dreams. I do sometimes when they happen and I'll like tell my wife about it, but I don't always like remember later on. I've been having some weird dreams the last couple nights, but my dreams can range from all sorts of crazy stuff. Like they're all over the place, honestly.
Yeah, I never remember my dreams either. Like, very rarely do I end up remembering what I dream about.
I mean, last night, I can't talk about... I would tell you guys, but I can't talk about my dreams. They're fucked up sometimes.
Next question, Rambone Slam Pig says, what are your New Japan Dad power rankings?
Oh, that's a tough one. Right now, I'd go Nagata 1. Probably go Tiger Mask 2 at this point. Kojima 3. Makabe 4. Tenzan 5. Is there anyone that's active that I'm not thinking of? That's in that dad classification?
No, I think that's all of them. And yeah, I pretty much agree with you there. Yeah, I think that's a solid list right there.
But I think a lot of those guys are about to be gone. You know, Tiger Mask's on his way out. Tenzan's hardly wrestling, and he looks, you know, like shit every time he's out there. I guess you could throw
Hanma.
I was gonna say you could throw Hanma in there too, and I'd put him last.
You put Hanma below Tenzan?
No, I'll put Hanma then Tenzan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's still, I think almost all of them are literally about done.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be an end of an era coming up soon.
Which, like, you know, the next era would have been like essentially Tanahashi's era. And he's riding off into the sunset. You know, Shibata is over in AEW. Nakamura is over in WWE. A lot of those juniors that were around back then, they're gone. Not a lot of people left from that era. And then you're getting into the Goto's.
Yeah.
I guess you could also throw Taguchi in there. He's basically dead at this point. And that's where you're going to get in that O2 class, you know, the Taguchis, the Goto's, people like that.
Yeah. Then he also asks, are you glad that NJPW saved enough money by not paying Naito that they could afford to bring Don Fale back to challenge for a title? Is New Japan saved?
On the same wavelength.
Yeah. That and like again, I get like there's financial stuff going on, but it's like Naito's not on the payroll, Okada's not on the payroll, Jay White's not on the payroll, Will Ospreay's on the payroll. It's like, where is this money going? next
to the women.
Yeah. Next question from Destino82. If you guys are headed to Japan for Wrestle Kingdom next year, what non-NJPW promotions are you most hoping to check out while live while you're out there?
I don't have one in particular right now because I don't necessarily follow any company out there. But I'm game to watch, you know, some shows. But it's not like the Wrestle Kingdoms. It's probably going to have to be Stardom, because I know that they always have their big, like, Wrestle Princess or whatever.
Dream Queendom, I think.
Dream Queendom, yeah. But, you know, it used to be where, like, all the companies had a big year-end show. I'm hoping All Japan has something like that that might be worthwhile going to. And they also used to have, like, the Indie Showcase where, like, Big Japan and Freedoms and Michinoku Pro and all of them would come together, but I don't think they do all that stuff as much anymore.
Yeah, for me, I just really want to see something in Korakuen. I'm hoping for, I think All Japan will probably be my thing I want to see, because I think, I don't know if Stardom's going to run Korakuen by the time we get there. So yeah, I mean, yeah, Stardom would be if there's a show with the timing that I want to see a Stardom show, but yeah, then the next would probably be All Japan. Then DeathTriangle720 says, do you think it would change anything for Gabe Kidd if he was on a dual contract already?
I mean, he's basically working like he is anyways.
Yeah, so I don't really know what that would change. I think there would still be New Japan fan base that's upset about it. And yeah, he's going to continue to work both places. DeathTriangle also asked, do you think one thing that hurt New Japan is the lack of impact to talent, character, or demeanor? I remember from the G1 final review, one thing brought up was that after Tsuji got booted out the G1 semifinal, he came up the next night with a smile on his face and not acting any different at all.
Yeah, I think that is accurate, and it's an issue, and it speaks to the creative again.
Yeah, like there should be direction of like, all right, yeah, you got screwed at this big match. Like, yeah, you should be frustrated. And like, instead of War Dogs, or instead of Unaffiliated going after War Dogs, like, Tsuji should be leading the charge to want to go after House of Tortures. Like,
yeah.
And also, I don't really want to necessarily see those matches, but still, like, storyline sense, like, this guy just screwed me. Like, I should have won. I should have been in the finals. Like, he just ruined my big moment. I'm going to go after Evil and, like, try to get revenge. But no, we're totally sidetracking and doing this whole War Dogs thing and Dave Finley, where it's like, sure, they wrestled in G1, they have a history, but like, that doesn't really make the most next sense to me, but whatever.
Next, I agree.
Next question here from Fraser Fierce Pussy D. Any chance Takeshita defends the world championship against Okada at the Dome?
Yes, I think that that's also a possibility. I talked to Rich about this a bit, and his whole thinking was that would imply that AEW has dedicated so much of their TV time to a match that's going to be given to New Japan, and that's highly unlikely. And normally, I would be inclined to agree, except for my thinking is that if that even is the case, we've heard the reports of the conjoined efforts between New Japan, AEW, and DDT as far as creative to get Takeshita over, which would imply some level of cohesion, at least when it comes to him, probably similar to how they intended to do it with Moxley last year. Mm-hmm. And if they were to give them that match, I would believe that it probably ended up happening in AEW first and then after as well. So if my belief is it would wind up being a trilogy, New Japan gets one of the matches and the other two both end up in AEW. And, you know, that's my feeling on it, is that AEW would still get the lion's share of it all, you know, if that were to take place. I also think that it probably enabled AEW to get some sort of hefty payoff for lending Okada to the company for a Wrestle Kingdom show as well.
Yeah, and y'all see their rivalry is kind of bubbling now, and I know there's rumor that maybe the first match maybe happens in the C2, and then, yeah, you do the rematch at the Dome. But, yeah, you want to sell tickets. You know, Okada's first Dome main event in a few years, like, that could be a big draw that helps fill that Tokyo Dome out.
I know I had some egg on my face last year when I was trying to predict what could potentially happen in the Dome. When it came to Zach, and I was predicting potentially an Okada thing, didn't come to fruition. The difference here, though, is that these two guys are on screen feuding as we speak. Now, maybe it will just be subjugated to just a AEW sort of thing, but I don't think you can completely discount the idea that it could bleed over into New Japan, especially if Takeshita is the world champion and loses to Okada prior to Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah, that could be an easy setup to the Tokyo Dome match.
Which can you imagine the outrage of the IWGP champion losing to AEW's like secondary champion, basically?
Yeah, it'll be a full on meltdown. And kind of a similar question here, DatJimmy13, if Takeshita wins the title, who should he face at Wrestle Kingdom, and who will he face if those are two different answers?
I have no doubt that he's winning the title, personally. I know that there are stats about first-time challengers winning the belt, and guys that have just won the G1 turning around and successfully obtaining the title afterwards, and the numbers are not in his favor. But the politics are.
Yeah.
You know, not just because of AEW, but also because he's got TV Asahi bound behind him. If they were intending for him to not win the title, then the right place to do something like that would hypothetically be Wrestle Kingdom. And they're having the title shot before then. Like, it just, everything screams to me he's winning the belt. And, for me, the only three guys that make sense, and Jeremy, maybe you could think of something better, but the three guys that make the most sense to me right now, and it's not going to be popular answers because I know a lot of people are hoping for like Tsuji or a young guy, but I don't think he's dropping the title at Wrestle Kingdom personally. So my thinking is it's either going to be Goto, Okada, or I could realistically see it being Naito.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are solid options. I mean, I would go with Tsuji, but again, do you want Tsuji to lose in the Dome? Or is it just more important that he gets a Dome main event in a big program and gets over? I don't know. I feel like
that's how you would sell it.
Yeah, I think that for the long term future of the company, I think it's important. I would just try to get him that Dome main event, even if he does lose, and make sure it's a killer match, and he gets over in losing, and there's a big rematch where he does eventually beat Takeshita. But I just don't know if they would go that route, but yeah, I definitely could see, like, yeah, Goto or Okada. Naito would be interesting, bring him back for that, and definitely would help draw.
But yeah. Yo, there's photos coming out of Donald Trump. We might have a leading FOH candidate come December.
let's see here. DeathTriangle720 asked, do you think there's a matchup New Japan should protect for the next coming years? What I mean is, in the past, New Japan protected certain matches to the point they'd separate talent for years. Okada Naito, Omega Tanahashi, Ibushi, Okada, etc.
I personally cannot see a single match that needs to be protected that they haven't already done. Maybe there's something I'm overlooking, but it feels like with their need to get a lot of these young guys involved in the G1 over the past 3 or 4 years, they've really done most of the matches. So that basically means that the next answer would be build up the rematches that might be meaningful from a business standpoint, hold off on doing them for a while, and then return to them once they're more financially viable.
Yeah, like I know like Tsuji and Uemura, they've kind of had a rivalry going, and yeah, maybe if you can heat those guys up and keep them apart, that could be potentially something that's a match that you would save if you can elevate those guys.
But it's not a situation like when they first did Tanahashi and Okada, they held them off for years and then built to it, and then it was finally a big meaningful match. They don't really have that luxury anymore. I don't think there's very many fresh matchups today in New Japan that they've never gotten to.
Yeah. Like I say, it's going to have to be redoing something they've already done and building the guys up and holding it off.
How I am about to pull over to the terminal. How many more questions we got here, Jeremy?
There's a couple more, but we can push them to next week.
No, we can keep going. Just how many do we have?
There is 1, 2, 3 more.
We are going to have to push them. I'm getting a call right now, and I am going to have to go. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I am actually going to drop off the call right now.
All righty, Ben.
All right. Well, talk to you all later.
That is going to wrap things up for this week. Next week, we'll be back to review Blue Justice and cover all this news. Remember, if you want to watch our show live or listen without ads, you can sign up at patreon.com/KIStrongStyle. You can also make a donation by visiting socialsuplex.com/donate and click on the donate button under the Keeping a Strong Style logo. Make sure you connect with us on social media on X and Blue Sky. Follow us at KIStrongStyle, at Socialsuplex, and at Jeremy Donovan, and at YB_Josh and Liger. On Facebook, follow us at facebook.com/socialsuplex and the Wrestling Square Circle Facebook group. On Reddit, on the Pro Black Guy, Josh Keeping Strong Style. On YouTube, we're at Social Suplex. Join our Social Suplex Discord server to interact with us and other wrestling fans. You can email me, jeremy@socialsuplex.com. And check out all the shows that we have here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Street Radio with Rich Latta and James Boyd. All Things Elite with Floyd and Austin. Imps, AEW Adventure with the Implications Matthew Mayer. Wrestling Art with Chris Things. Tall Talk with Ali and Leah. And the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating and review. And we'll catch you next week on Keeping a Strong Style, the ace of podcasts, Ichiban.
Thank you for listening to Keeping It Strong Style. We'll see you next time.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.